Kachuk, Lemieux, and Gretzky, all center icemen on the ice, and it looks as though Howard Chuck will draw the assignment against Becca. Howard Chuck wins it in. Here's Lemieux poking at the center. Lemieux ahead to Gretzky. Has Murphy with him on a 2-on-1 to Lemieux. And on goal, he shoots, he scores! Mario Lemieux with 1:26 remaining.
22 minutes after 4 o'clock on Downtown. Going back 30 years for some of the greatest hockey ever played. Our next guest here to talk about it, it's our friend, author and critic Colin Fleming, joining us on Downtown. Colin, welcome back to the show, and some pretty impressive hockey there that I had forgotten how good it was until you sent me the link to watch that Canada Cup series with Canada and the Soviet Union back in 87.
Just hearing Dan Kelly call that game there has me ready to lower my shoulder now and pop somebody through the boards. That is some exciting stuff.
Amazing games and amazing talent on those rosters.
I think you could make a comfortable case that those are the two best teams ever to lace them up. And Team Canada was just studded with one Hall of Famer after another. To give you an idea, the power play, which was allowing a couple of shorthanded goals, that's how good the Soviet side was. But the Team Canada power play was Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Marc Messier, Paul Coffey, and Ray Bourque. And Soviet Union was so good that they were able to score a few shorthanded goals against that unit. That's the level of talent we're talking about between these two teams.
Hi, Colin. This is Bruce Pratt. I do with the Sports Lit thing here. I would argue, I was glad you said that because I never saw a better team. I also think that a lot of ways Mike Keenan doesn't get enough credit for having all that talent and having him work so well together. Would you agree with that?
I would, in terms of the way it ultimately coalesced, but there was a near mutiny during camp and then during the early portion of that tournament for Team Canada. Keenan loved to play head games. In fact, his roster selection was sort of questionable at the time. He left off players like Al MacInnis, Steve Yzerman, who he always had a personal grudge against, Cam Neely, and you had players like Norman Rochefort on the defense with Doug Crossman, and that seemed a little shaky that you left so many Hall of Famers, Scott Stevens, off the team, and then eventually a couple of the Oilers players, Messier and Gretzky, had to intercede with Keenan and say, look, you're riding this bunch pretty hard. These are some awfully established guys here. You can let us do our thing a bit more.
So much talent on both sides, but the way Gretzky played in this series, in many ways otherworldly, and you put it with some of the greatest athletic performances in any sport of any time.
I'll say it's the best North American in terms of most dominant athlete playing the absolute best he ever did. He was Euclid on skates, as far as I'm concerned. And you can see him during this tournament, especially in the final three games against the Soviet Union, at a level I don't think anyone has come close to. I don't think a Michael Jordan has come close to it. I don't think a Brady during his best ever half of football. Gretzky, you can really watch and see what he does and how he played in ways no one else would think to. For instance, during the first game, our man, Ray Bourque, is just firing the puck, dump in, into the Soviet end. And he turns around, so he has his back really to the Soviet end, fires a slap shot, turnaround slap shot. Gretzky, unlike every other player on the ice, before Bourque has even fired the puck, is making a beeline for this patch of ice near the Soviet net where no one else would think to go. Gretzky arrives right as the puck caroms out from behind the net onto his stick. It's a level of anticipation where you're working out fractal patterns on the ice in nanoseconds in your head. And it's who thinks like that, let alone at 23 miles per hour?
Well, one of the other things I think that really points up is that the Soviet team had been playing together as a unit for a long time. These guys are great players, are all thrown in. I think what it shows is that particular group of players had mad skills compared to almost any other era because of things like that. I mean, when Gretzky found that piece of open ice, some people would argue that's one of the best goals ever scored.
Yes, and I think you could also say that Soviet Union had the second best player of the 1980s, and Sergei Makarov. He was better than Lemieux. He was better than Coffey. He was better than Bork for that stretch of time anyway. So we're talking like the real big boys here. But if you look at the game, basically the series winning goal in game three, there's a face-off deep in Team Canada's end. Dale Hawerchuk takes it, and the puck squirts forward. The Soviet defenseman pinches, causing the puck to just rattle out to center ice. And Gretzky's the first one on it. And anyone who's ever played hockey at any level, pond hockey, high school hockey, Division I hockey, NHL hockey, if you're first out of the zone, you're going to pick up that puck. But Gretzky wants nothing to do with it. It's bizarre almost to watch. He skates past it because what he wants to do is establish this attacking geometric pattern down the ice. So the puck is eventually headman to him. And by the time that happens, you have this triangle advancing with Larry Murphy driving the net. And any player would pass it to Murphy, but not Gretzky. He delays for this little beat, kicks it back to Mario Lemieux, and the second it's on Lemieux's stick, it's in the top of the net. The entire play, from soup to nuts, one end of the ice to the other, takes about 5 seconds.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown about the 87 Canada Cup. And Colin, it's a measure of how strong these rosters were when you look at some of the guys who didn't make the team and who got cut.
Yeah, this is big boy hockey. I mean, you're leaving off guys that... What you're trying to do, in a sense, is it's not an all-star team. It's a roster, and it was very top-heavy with centers. But the thinking was that players like Dale Hawerchuk, Doug Gilmore, could man the wing. And so when Canada falls behind 3 goals in that final game, it's not Gretzky, Lemieux et al. Who gets them back in it. It's the Grinders. It's your Rick Tocchet. It's your Hawerchuk. It's your Brian Props. It's players like that who claw them back to even in that game. And you have to keep in mind at the same time, this Soviet team was so formidable. You have the legendary Green Unit, and you're talking basically a five-man assemblage that you could say is the best line ever in the history of hockey. I don't know how you get better than Krutov, Larionov, Makarov, Fetisov, and Konstantinov. Now, Americans just kind of remember Vladimir Krutov because he came over here and he played briefly with the Vancouver Canucks, and he was kind of heavy at that time because of, like, the transition to American life, and he had the unfortunate appellation of Vlad the Inhaler and Vladimir Crouton. But during this period, he's basically as good as Lemieux. Like, he's better than Mike Bossy was. He was that good.
What's remarkable when you go back and watch these games, you forget the unbelievable pace of play in these games and how slow, by comparison, hockey seems today.
It's very packed in now. It's very system-driven. It's very lines 1 through 4. And you don't even really have grinders anymore. You don't have much in terms of extemporaneous hockey. It's very system-driven. In fact, during the second game of the 3-game finals, which I think you could call sport at the level of art, Ron Roche, the announcer, says to Dan Kelly, the play-by-play guy, he's like, can you believe this pace? Like, you get the feeling that these guys calling the game are toweling themselves off as they watch. It is frantic, cartoonish almost.
One of the other things I'd love to have you talk about is there were a lot of good teams in that Canada Cup series. And when I look at the U.S. roster and see that they got beat so soundly by the Soviets, that also sort of adds to the legacy of how good the Soviets were. I mean, I'm going down there and I'm seeing Carpenter and Chelios and Nylund and LaFontaine and Langway and Eddie Olczyk and some pretty good hockey players, and the Soviets just beat them in Hartford like a drum.
You have like Phil Housley on that American team,
yeah.
But even their Hall of Famers, with the exception of like Chelios, they're kind of like grade B and grade C Hall of Famers. Like Rod Langway has the 2 Norris trophies, but no one puts him at the level of like a Bork, say, like a generational defenseman. And I think that they carried in a sort of like defeatist attitude, really, because you're in the NHL. This was a big deal. If you were an American back then and you were in the NHL, like when Bobby Carpenter got the 50 goals, you remember what a big deal that was? Mm. It was like shocking that an American could score 50 goals, and then he never came close again. And you're going against these Oilers players and Michel Goulet and Glenn Anderson, and just I don't know how you could think in your mind that you're on like a level patch of ice really with that group. Like everyone pretty much knew and wanted that the final was going to be Soviet Union and Team Canada, because you had the 72 Summit Series, you had the 76 Canada Cup, and 81. Let's not forget that the Soviet Union waxed Team Canada 8-1 in the final. And in 84, you had an amazing overtime game with Mike Bossy scoring the winner to defeat the Soviets. So that was the marquee matchup. That was Celtics versus Lakers times like 10 at the international level.
Would you agree, though, that the 72 Summit Series is a deeper part of the Canadian psyche even than 87?
I would. I would say that the hockey is not at the same level. I think you could make a case that the first game of that Summit Series, when starts off, Phil Esposito scores, everyone on the Team Canada bench is yucking it up. It's like the ice capades. This is going to be great fun.
Yeah.
And it's like this is less fun now that Valerie Harlamov is doing these awful, awful things to us. I think in terms of like influence for one game, that's just a pivotal contest. That served international notice that the Soviet Union and their style of play, because when things get difficult for Team Canada, they always do the same thing. They dump, they grind, they muck, they outwork you. But now you had this emergent style of play of a team attacking in concentric circles almost, bobbing, weaving, picks. It was strange. And I think that in terms of hockey, historical import, and yes, ultimately in the end, the Paul Henderson goal means more to Canadians than the 87 finals do. But I don't think for the level of hockey you can touch what happened in that three-game series.
Some great hockey talk. Our friend Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Colin, we appreciate it as always. And next time around, we're going to look back at a couple of terrific TV shows based in New England that debuted around the same time, 35 years ago.
Ah, now you've put the Cheers and Newhart theme songs in my head, Henry Mancini style.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. Colin, thanks as always. We'll talk with you soon.
All right, thank you.